We're here because we don't buy into the bullshit of mainstream culture. We're tired of the mundane, passionless careers we've been shuffled into as a result of this orchestrated debt-based system of rule, and the stranglehold on education and entertainment by cold, soulless corporations. People, yes, we are frustrated. Yes, we are tired. And we reject the pre-approved tranquilizers that are Monday Night Football and an ice-cold Budweiser. But we have to stop hiding. Stop hiding behind the headphones and the Cherry Popper 420 username. Let the world see that the resistance is strong and society is changing. There was a time to be anonymous, but that time has passed. And so the Higher Side Chats would like to present Conspiracies as the dawning of this new paradigm in the uniform of the revolution. Because bold fashion should mean more than some celebrity meat dresser frat boy in a silly pink polo. Conspiracies redefines bold fashion as having the balls to reject socially uncomfortable and unpopular truths from your radiant chest all fucking day. Conspiracies.net. Let them know that you know. Bold designs for troubled times. Hard truths. Soft cock.
In the 1930s, President Franklin Delano Roosevelt addressed the nation through a series of radio broadcasts known as the Fireside Chats. His aim was to reassure the common man that our society would recover from its troubled times. But we're far from 1930, and I deal with a different kind of fire. For a new era of worldly frustration, we offer a fresh conversation. I'm Greg Carlwood, and these are the Higher Side Chats.
Welcome back, Higher Side Chatters. Drinking a little drink, smoking a little smoke. From San Diego, I'm Greg Carlwood, and I'm really excited about the information in today's show, because a lot of us out there can see that life in the Western world seems a little less appealing every day, whether we're keyed into the constant subtext that our economy is on seriously shaky ground with a population that's literally held hostage by the operators of the Federal Reserve and their band of merry men, or maybe it's the recent revelation that every major communications company is providing the NSA with a backdoor into your phone, computer, and goddamn Xbox that has you rattled. The list of concerns goes on and on, but whatever it is, most of us are stuck inside the American bubble without the knowledge or resources on how to best keep ourselves from being victims of a problem we can see coming from a mile away. And what good is that knowledge just to say I told you so to the people you're shackled to on the way to the FEMA camp? Well, today's guest, anarchist Jeff Berwick, started a website called Dollar Vigilante with the tagline, Surviving and Prospering During and After the Collapse. And that's what he's here to help us with today. In 1994, Jeff founded Canada's largest financial website, Stockhouse.com, and was CEO for 8 years till he sold the company, decided to travel the world, visiting over 100 countries and gaining knowledge that no broken school system could ever provide. And I'm thankful that he's going to share some of that knowledge with us here today. Jeff, my man, welcome to THC.
Oh, thank you, Greg. Great to be here.
It's a real pleasure. I'm glad you're here. There's a ton of questions I have for you because as much as I like to talk about UFOs and psychedelics, I don't know how that's going to help me improve my life, especially when I can barely pay the rent. But to get this ball rolling, let's talk about your travels. I'm sure you have some great stories. I know you had a pretty big hiccup near El Salvador. How'd all that stuff happen?
Well, you brought up, I started up Stockhouse.com in Canada, still the largest financial website in Canada. So, but I didn't know what how bubbles were created. So I wasn't paying attention to what Greenspan was doing, that bastard. And he was creating a bubble in tech. And what happened is my company grew to a size of $240 million. And then a few weeks later, it was almost worthless. So I kind of had a few questions about that. I was kind of curious, yeah. What happened exactly? And no one knew. I went to brokers. I went to your all these sort of MBA types, and everyone just shrugged their shoulders and they just said, well, that just happens sometimes. And I said, I don't think that's all there is to this. And I was living in Canada at the time, and up there we have the CBC government news channel, propaganda channel, and I knew I wasn't getting the entire worldview on what's going on from the CBC. And so I thought, well, I have some time now. I'm kind of done with this company, and I have a little bit of money left from that whole collapse, and so I bought a sailing catamaran, and I thought, I'm going to try to sail the world and see what's really going on through my own eyes and not through the lens of the media. And so I started, and it actually 1 year from the time I bought the boat, I got down to El Salvador and got caught up in some stuff. And pretty quickly, my boat sank, and I ended up on my surfboard.
Oh, man.
And then some guys saved us. Obviously, the government didn't save us. We called the El Salvadorian Navy, and they said, maybe tomorrow we'll come look for you. But some real people came and saved us, a couple Americans and a guy from New Zealand. And he didn't come from New Zealand, he just happened to be in the area. And when I got to the shore, it was an amazing feeling because everything I owned was on that boat. And all I had, I actually saved my credit cards and my passport in my board shorts that had a zipper on them. And I just bought a backpack, and it was an amazing feeling because I was completely free. It's like, do I even go to the left? Do I go to the right? I don't even know where I am to begin with. And I just thought, I'm going to buy a backpack and travel the world for at least a few years. And it turned out to be about 4 or 5 years. Damn. And live completely spontaneously. I would literally go to a airport sometimes and say, what's the next flight you got? And a few times I actually got on flights. I didn't even know where I was going. Those two places ended up being Sharjah. I don't know if you know where that is.
No,
neither did I. It's actually pretty much a suburb of Dubai. I didn't even know that. And the other time I was in Sri Lanka, and I hopped on a plane. Actually, the Sri Lankan airport had just got bombed that day by the Tamil Tigers. And I thought my flight would be delayed. I actually woke up in the morning, and I turned on the news, and they said the airport's being bombed by the Tigers, the Freedom Fighters, or whatever, which is sort of over now. But so I thought, oh, good, I can sleep a few more hours because my flight's obviously going to be delayed. And I showed up, and they're like, no, your flight's gone. I'm like, you didn't even delay the flights when you're getting bombed? They're like, no, that happens all the time. I'm like, okay. So I go, what's your next flight? And they said, Chennai. Have you ever heard of Chennai?
Nope.
Okay, me either. So it actually turns out to be Madras is what it used to be called in India. I knew I was going to India, but I didn't know where. So I actually got into Chennai and got on the internet and did actually Google Maps. I don't think even existed back then, 2004. Maybe it did, but it was more like MapQuest back then. Yeah. And figure out where I was. And yeah, so I lived that way for a number of years, and it really opened my eyes. I really got to see what's really going on in the world. And along the way, I discovered Austrian economics, and that explained completely what happened with the tech bubble. It explained completely what happened with the housing bubble and collapse in the U.S. And it's going to soon explain why all the fiat currencies are all going to collapse in the next few years.
Yeah, I mean, that's crazy. Why don't you tell us a little bit about the bubbles? I mean, we've talked at length about the Federal Reserve and, you know, the fractional reserve banking system. But in terms of economics, these bubbles that happen, how are they completely manufactured?
Well, it's all money printing. One thing that you might notice in your government indoctrination camps, your 12 years of child slavery and getting your badge of obedience after 12 years, is they never talk about the money system, and that's because they don't want you to know. Ford, who created obviously the automobile, he said that if people in the U.S. understood how the monetary system worked, there'd be a revolution tomorrow. And he's right. And that's why they don't want them to know. But now, thanks to the internet, people are finding out how it all works. It's a cabal. It's completely controlled. Actually, central banks are a tenet of communism. They have nothing to do with free markets or capitalism or anything to do with that. It's a way to control the money system. It's a way to pay for communism by printing money. It's a way to pay for wars. You couldn't have all these wars. There's no way that not even to call them wars, more like occupations, right. But you know, you wouldn't have this Iraq war, Afghanistan war, Libya, and now they're getting involved in Syria. You wouldn't have these if every single U.S. Subject got a check in the mail or a bill in the mail every month for all the wars. It would all be over within a matter of days. Yeah. But because they can print money, they can kind of continue to do these things. And Alan Greenspan, or sorry, not Alan Greenspan, I hate to misequate him with Ron Paul, who I really meant. Ron Paul stated that it's no coincidence that the century of total war coincided with the century of central banking. You can't have World War I, World War II. You look at World War I, that started in 1914. 1913 is when the Federal Reserve was founded. So this is all a part of this system of warfare, control, oppression that we still have today. And hopefully the 100th anniversary of the Federal Reserve is this coming Christmas Eve. And hopefully that will be the end of the Federal Reserve by the 100th year. It might not happen that fast, but it's definitely going to happen in the next few years. And you can see it uprising all over the place with what's happened with Ron Paul calling for an end to the Fed. 10 years ago, 20 years ago, people wouldn't even know what the Federal Reserve was, but they're waking up now thanks to the internet.
That is totally true. But man, this is crazy. You've seen a lot of places, you've observed a bunch of governments and economies, gained some serious insight. And you know, on some particularly frustrating days, I've said to the audience, let's just get 10% of the people listening to move somewhere. And I get a bunch of responses from people hungry for something else, but the reality is that I just don't know enough about the world. But there are places in the world where disgruntled Americans are moving to, right? I mean, can you tell us about some of these places?
Well, absolutely. This is a big movement going on, and it's just almost like a migration. It's almost like, I call it defecting now, because that's how it used to be in the Soviet Union. The U.S. is getting this bad now that you should really look to defect before it's too late. that border, that gate or fence on the Mexican border isn't to keep Mexicans out. It's to keep Americans in, as you can see with what Homeland Insecurity is doing now, buying billions of hollow point bullets, buying tanks. So that's the direction it's going. So a lot of people are realizing that if they're going to get out, they should get out fairly quickly. I realized this about 10 years ago, not completely, but I definitely was sensing that I should get out and at least see what's going on. And I left Canada in 2004, many people, and I mostly live in Mexico now. I'm actually coming in today from Acapulco, Mexico, but I'm actually building a expat community in Chile. Chile is an amazing place. The government is nowhere near as oppressive. They've moved much more towards free markets. The government has no debt. It has no deficits. The central bank isn't even Keynesian. They're Friedmanites, which is better. It's still not perfect. It'd be perfect if they just closed the central bank. But the economy's booming down there, and so many people are gravitating down there. And so I've actually started a community down there called Galt's Chile. And it's fashioned after Ayn Rand's book, Atlas Shrugged, where all the same stuff happened in Atlas Shrugged, where the world, or at least the U.S., had become completely oppressive, socialist, massive taxes, massive regulations, and no one could get ahead. And so many of the producers all went to a place called Galt's Gulch. In the book, which was written in the 50s, that was in Colorado, so we can't do that anymore. But Chile is sort of the new place that a lot of people are going to, and I highly recommend people look into it.
Man, you know, I've considered moving to Mexico or Costa Rica, but I've been worried about a few things, mainly safety, internet connection, and cost of living. And I know that it's kind of tough because I want to find a place that has reliable internet but isn't so saturated that the cost of living is like what I'm experiencing in San Diego. I want something similar weather-wise to San Diego where I could maybe make some money in real estate or just relax and do my show. Chile has a similar climate to San Diego, if I'm not mistaken, right?
That's right. Well, Chile is a very long country. It's like thousands of miles long. But in the area around Santiago, which is where Galt's Gulch is, that's a Southern California climate, yes. And to answer some of your concerns, you brought up internet connection. I'm coming in from Acapulco. Our connection's incredibly clear. I'm in a 100 megabit line here, which costs, I believe, about $60 a month. What was some of the other, cost of living, it's much cheaper to live here. Talk about medical for one example. Almost every pharmacy in Mexico has a doctor on staff, so if you do want to talk to somebody about something, it costs 25 pesos, which is about $2. You know, the things that are going on in the U.S., most people in the U.S. don't realize they're just being completely raped and oppressed and destroyed. The money system's being destroyed, all the regulations, Obamacare is coming into effect soon, which is they're talking about the cheapest plan that a family can get is $20,000 per year. It's unbelievable. It's fascism, it's communism all mixed into one. The world is much better outside of the U.S. And another one is safety. You talk about that. The U.S. government and the U.S. media is trying like crazy to make Mexico look dangerous. Right. Chicago, every single day, 30 people get shot. When I go up to the U.S. from Mexico, everyone tells me be really careful because they see all the news about places like Chicago and New York, and you even look at Boston, what happened there. And I was actually in New York when the Boston false flag event happened. And I don't know if not many people know this, but when they were looking for that 19-year-old boy who was super dangerous because he had some cooking equipment apparently and he was throwing them out of cars. They said for one moment, they said, we can't find him, but we think he might have gone to New York. And Bloomberg actually stated, he said, if he's here, we're going to shut down this city. So I was sitting there, in New York, just sweating. And all my Mexican friends were like, you got to get out of there. I'm like, I know I'm crazy for even having come here. I don't even know why I did it. It's so much safer down here. It's unbelievably safer. It's just you can do anything you want. There's no real rules. That's another reason I think the U.S. government wants to make Mexico look dangerous is because it's so close to the U.S. and it's such a freer country. And so you have a lot of the spring breaker kids and stuff like that come down here and they're like, you know, talking to people, they're like, yeah, we're from the land of the free. And it's like, oh, what can you do there? And they're like, well, nothing like what we can do here. And, you know, they start to wake up a little bit. It's like, oh, you can actually drink a beer outside in Mexico. You can actually go to a club after 2 a.m. You can, you know, all the, it's much, much freer. And so, yeah, it's all that stuff. It's total propaganda. I feel much safer here in Mexico than in the U.S. by far. I actually try not to even go to the U.S. anymore, especially when you go through the TSA. Then you get through and the police are everywhere watching for you, seeing if you drive a little too fast or a little too slow. They'll stop you for either one. You have to drive the exact arbitrary speed limit that they say, or they'll accost you and, you know, search your car. And, you know, it's very, very, you've seen it, I'm sure. Everyone's seen it in the U.S. And so, yeah, it's just insane that people actually think that it's actually scary going to places like Costa Rica or Mexico or anywhere, really. The only... I actually sat down at a bar in Aruba once, and I sat beside a woman from New York, and I told her that I'd been to about 100 countries, and she said, wow, you must have seen so many scary and dangerous things. And I actually sat back in my chair, and I thought about it for a second. I'd never had that question asked to me, and I thought, you know, I can't think of one scary or dangerous thing I've ever seen in my travels. And then I said, oh, wait, no, there was 2 times that I actually feared for my life a little bit. And she said, oh, yeah, where was that? And I said, both times it was in New York.
Well, it's funny because, you know, as a stoner sometimes, and I grew up in Missouri. Now I'm in California where I don't have as many problems. But in Missouri, you know, if you're smoking a bowl with some friends in a car in a park, you're looking around at other cars, you're only worried that that other car will be a cop or that that person will call cops. Like, you're not really worried about regular people.
And, yeah, I called slave on slave action when the actual other people are actually, you know, calling the cops on you. It's unbelievable. Not many people know this. In Mexico, all drugs are legal. You're allowed to have any drug you want. Even in this area, I've actually gone to cops in the past, a few years ago in my more younger, wilder days. I'm getting a little older now. And if you run out of weed or any drug you want, you can just go to the cops and they'll call someone for you.
Okay, well, let's talk about the cops in Mexico because, you know, the conventional attitude is that they are corrupt. I mean, of course, our police are corrupt too, but they're apparently they'll stop you on the road and ask for money, or if they see a PlayStation on the seat. I've heard someone tell me that the cops demanded the PlayStation to be let go when they weren't breaking any laws. What do you think of that? Is that wrong? Is that perception wrong?
Mexico is a huge country, and there is places True. That I've heard are not that great. Tijuana, I've heard recently, is really bad. So a lot of the places that are kind of close to the U.S., those border cities, there is a fair amount of that kind of stuff. I still prefer it, though, however, to the U.S., where I've been in handcuffs many times. They were going to kidnap me, put me in a cage for just doing little things like walking out of a bar with a drink. Or one time I was walking in Palm Springs, just walking down the street, of just going to another bar after one, and 5 squad cars all surrounded me with floodlights on me, put me immediately in handcuffs. I said, what's going on? They said, we got a call that you're drunk. And I said, well, is it illegal to be drunk? You know, like, you know, I was just walking down the street. I was like, yeah, I've had some drinks. I'm pretty buzzed. I'm not like falling down drunk. I'm just, you know, walking along buzzed. And so, no, it's much scarier there because, of course, you can't get out of that. You can't. I actually prefer corruption. If you're going to have cops, and I highly advise people not to ever have them, but if you're going to have them, I'd much rather that they would accept $20 or $10 just to let you go than end up in a cage, as so many of my friends have ended up. I was in Las Vegas, and we wrote about this on our blog at dollarvigilante.com. A friend of mine spilled a drink, and the security escorted him out, and he asked for his money back because he had just entered, and he paid $30, and he accidentally spilled a drink, and he said he was sorry, and he wanted his money back, and they called the cops, and he ended up for almost 24 hours in what he called almost torture-like conditions in some sort of dungeon, basically one of those typical city jails or whatever they have. That's much more scary to me than anything that I've ever seen here in Mexico. Now, of course, there is places, there is certain times, you might have some small problems, but it's nothing that a $20 or $50 can't fix, which I much prefer.
Yeah, I mean, I've been to Tijuana, actually. My girlfriend had a few too many mimosas one breakfast, and she flipped over her handlebars and knocked her front teeth out.
And, ouch.
Yeah. Without insurance, we thought, hey, like, this is a good time to test that whole theory of going to get dental work done in Mexico. We hear people talk about it. And I was like, I'll go for a cleaning. What the hell? And we went down there. And the most off-putting thing was just how aggressive the cab drivers were about wanting to take some white people anywhere, you know, and that's not necessarily a bad thing. Aggressive cab drivers. Overall, I thought it was great. When we got to the place, it was just as nice as any facility I'd ever been to. I mean, the dentist didn't speak English, but he had a translator right there because they're so accustomed to having Americans come down there. And yeah, I thought it was quite different than the perception that people might have about it.
Yeah, I hear that a lot about a lot of Americans come down. They say, oh, I can't believe it. Like, so many people are just offering me stuff. And I'm like, if that's your biggest problem is that you're being offered too many things, I think, you know, that's not a really bad day. It's like, oh, I got offered drugs. I got offered to take to a strip club. I got offered this. I got offered that. It's like, oh, that's terrible. You know, like, it's not really all that bad. And of course, if you go into touristy areas, you'll get that a lot more. And of course, Tijuana is a lot more like that. If you stay a little bit outside of the touristy areas, it's not like that at all. And your average Mexican is very nice to foreigners. They just want to help. They do want to help you get whatever you want. And a funny story about dental work, just last week, my friend, who's a bit of an idiot, was at a strip club here in Acapulco, and the girl wanted $8 for sitting with him for 30 minutes. Oh, and my friend was he's a real idiot sometimes when he drinks. And he was like, no, I'm not paying it. That's too much. And she got really mad. And this is not normal, by the way. I've never had this happen to me. I've been to strip clubs here thousands of times. she got mad and like swung her purse at him and actually like chipped his front tooth. And so my friend left, and the next day he walks up and he goes, man, that girl chipped my tooth last night. And I go, oh, let me see it. And he goes, oh, I already got it fixed. I went to the dentist and they already like, I didn't even know you could do it that fast.
Yeah.
And he said, yeah. And like half my front tooth was missing and now it's fine. And I was like, wow, that was fast. And I go, how much did it cost? He said, about $30.
Jesus. So, I mean, let's talk about the police force and the laws in Chile, because I do have a long history of shitty interactions with the police. In fact, my girlfriend just today, literally today, she woke up with a ticket on her car because the wheels weren't turned enough towards the curb. This is the stupid shit I deal with every day. Like, I'm sick of it. And I also, you know, don't want to get hassled over a little weed either. I mean, are those types of problems people would have in Chile?
No, it's possible, but highly, highly unlikely. Same in Mexico. You know, my American friends are always asking me, both in Chile and here in Mexico, when they stop their car, they say, okay, well, you know, where's the meters? And I'm like, there is no meters. You just, if there's a space, you just park there. And there's definitely no, if your wheels are turned the wrong way, you're going to get in trouble or anything like that. No, it's very much, Americans have no idea how oppressive the police is in the U.S. It's one of the worst places on earth. I really just don't ever want to go there just for that reason. I'm constantly being hassled. I'm either smoking within 30 feet of a doorway outside and being hassled, or it's just unbelievable. And no, you won't have any problems. As far as marijuana goes, as I told you, in Mexico, it's actually legal. It's fine. We were at a local bar here that I go to quite a bit. And one of my friends is from Holland. And of course, he likes weed a lot. And he said, can I smoke in here? I said, yeah, of course, it's Mexico. And he smoked. And actually, the manager came up and he said, he was super apologetic. He said, I'm so, so sorry. Would you mind smoking that outside? And I asked him, I said, why? What's going on? Like, this is not normal behavior. And he's like, I'm really sorry, but there's a family at the booth next to you and they don't like it. And I said, okay, well, if they don't like it, that's no problem. We can go outside and do it. But he apologized the whole rest of the night. So that's the kind of lifestyle you have in these sort of places.
I mean, it sounds great. What can you tell me about, like, getting there? I mean, how about getting citizenship or residency in some of these places? I know you have services for that on your website, but, like, what does it entail? What could someone expect to pay? How long does it take?
Well, I really recommend that most people try to live something that I've been living for 10 years now, which is called a permanent traveler or prior taxpayer lifestyle. So I actually try not to be a resident where I live. So for Mexico, I'm not a resident at all. When you enter Mexico, you get a 6-month tourist visa. And I travel more than every 6 months. I travel almost every month or every few weeks outside of the country, so I never have a problem with that. If you do want to stay longer, they really don't care. You can actually go. I have friends who've stayed here for 5 or 10 years and on their 6 month visa. And when you leave, what I recommend is fly up to Tijuana and walk across the border into the U.S. They don't even have any Mexican people checking your tourist visas or anything at that point. And even if you do want to leave through an airport or something, they'll usually ask for some sort of a fee. It's usually not too much. Or there's other ways. I actually know many tricks how to get around all that stuff, of course. So I really wouldn't even worry about that sort of thing. Chile is a little bit different. They're a little bit stricter on the tourist visas. I believe it is still 6 months. I was just in Chile, and we have at our place there, Galt's Gulch, we have a number of employees, and a few of them, or no, it's 3 months in Chile, and one took a bus to Mendoza, Argentina, and the other guy flew because one of them wanted to save a bit of money. And so every 3 months they take a 45-minute flight or a few hour bus ride to Argentina just to renew their tourist visa. So you can do that. Or in Chile, it's very easy. It's very incredibly easy to get some sort of residency visa. You just have to have some sort of income or have some sort of a job or something like that. And all that stuff, of course, can be very easily faked if you want. It's all very simple. And this is kind of stuff I've done for decades. And that's actually what I write about in our newsletter a lot, is how to do these kind of things and how to live free in this unfree world. And I've actually made it so I don't have to pay taxes anywhere, legally, living this lifestyle. I actually am a resident of a country that doesn't have any taxes. And then I just am a tourist everywhere else I live. And I just don't live in Canada anymore, which is where I'm from and I still have a passport of. And if I live outside of the country, they don't actually tax me. That's different for Americans, unfortunately, but they do have a $90,000 per year that you're allowed up to that you don't have to pay taxes on, as long as you are supposedly living in another country or have residency in another country. And so what you do is you become a resident of a place like Paraguay, which really has no income tax, and you can get a residency visa there quite cheap. We can help people with that. We actually help people get passports if you want, for people who have more money and want to get outside of the U.S. and actually even renounce their U.S. citizenship, which I highly recommend. We have that at something called tdvpassports.com if anyone's interested.
All right, so a lot of this stuff sounds great. Seems like you live an ideal life, but you're a man with money. And a lot of this seems like it might be outside of the resources of most people. You know, let's pretend you're in my boat, which I wouldn't wish on my worst enemy. I mean, I'm bringing in about $2,000 a month. I could do much better if I moved away from the beach, but, you know, the girlfriend wants to live by the goddamn beach, so what can you do? But how would I get started? I mean, I've thought about maybe foreign real estate. I feel trapped, you know? Like, what are the steps? What would someone who's broke do? If you were me and you didn't really have a lot of resources, what would your steps be?
Well, really, the first thing I would say to anyone is stop being broke. Find a way to make some money. I know it's incredibly hard in the U.S., and this is one of the things that so many people don't understand, is it used to be the land of opportunity, and now it's not. To open a lemonade stand in the U.S. now, John Stossel did a little look into it. It costs about $60,000 to open up a child's lemonade stand because of all the regulations, the safety inspections you need insurance. It's insane. In most other places, you can just open up a lemonade stand or open up a restaurant or open a bar. I would go to a place like Cambodia, where it's incredibly cheap. It's unbelievably cheap, and it's going to get so much better there. Their economy is booming now that it's back to being a very free market. You could actually open a bar in Cambodia, and actually we're going to write about a place in Cambodia that's going to be booming soon because they're going to open an international airport. You can open a bar there for probably about $200. Really, all you have to do is rent a space. Yeah, rent a space and just buy some tequila and beers, and you have a bar. That's all there is to it. These are the kinds of things you can do, and you can do that in places like Mexico as well. There's no real rules or regulations. So that's one thing. And then another thing is we have the internet, and the internet has a lot of opportunities. I don't know if you want to answer personally, but do you make most of your income over the internet?
No, I actually make most of my income and I don't mind answering any question. I'm not shy about that stuff, but I make most of my money at a day job, a corporate day job, where my salary is obviously capped. There's not much anywhere I can go. And all my money comes from essentially one resource, but I do sell t-shirts that are conspiracy related. That's a side business that, you know, helps pay for the show and stuff. And I'm trying to make that transition to, you know, self-made rather than getting my money from a corporation and trusting them to be there for me. I don't want to do that, but that's where I'm at.
Yeah, it's really interesting because that's what most people in the U.S. have been bred to do. That's what the public indoctrination camps were set up to do, was mm-hmm. to create factory workers and really obedient slaves who will show up at 9 in the morning, leave at 5, not ask too many questions. That's what they're being trained to do. But the real way to make money is to be an entrepreneur. And of course, you may have noticed yet again in all those 12 years of education that they never even talked about how to start up your own business or how to create your own enterprise or even be a private contractor or anything like that. These are the real ways to make some money. And thanks to the internet, there's so many opportunities. And I would, again, this is stuff that we write about all the time at our newsletter, Dollar Vigilante. Almost every week we have ideas for how people can make money in different countries or over the internet. Just one example, this week I'm going to write, and this will be a little bit out of your price range, probably a fair amount out of your price range, but for anyone who has a little bit of money, or maybe they can get a loan from their parents or somebody, in Chile, it's growing so fast, but they don't have like 7-Elevens or convenience stores. It's unbelievable in Santiago, which is booming. If I want some cigarettes, I end up walking like 10 blocks, and they're usually some little side cart thing that's usually closed at 10 at night. They need like 7-Elevens or convenience stores there. Of course, that's going to cost more than a few thousand to start up. But, you know, if you can get some capital from, you know, a lot of people ask their parents for it, or their parents save up for college education. That's just 4 more years of wasting right. your time. And then a lot of people go into student loan debt. Get outside of that. Tell your parents, you know, don't put me in college. Best education is actually travel and starting your own business, both at the same time, preferably. And so maybe get a loan or actually an investment. I actually definitely don't think of it as your parents giving you money. I don't actually like charity. I think people should invest in other people. I have 2 children of my own, and if they ever want to start their own business and they're looking for investment, I might invest in their business. I'll, of course, want to make sure that they've done the research and all that kind of thing. But that's the way that people should be thinking. And there's so many opportunities out there, especially once you get outside of the U.S., you can see so many opportunities. Here in Mexico, I'll give you another example, and this is something I've written about before on our newsletter. I started a hotel with 0 money down. What I did was, they're really bad in Mexico at marketing real estate. They're very behind the times. Most real estate companies don't even have a website. So wow. I went to the local real estate company, and I said, I found out what they're offering, and I just listed it on the internet in English, which, you know, would be obvious, you would think, to most people, but they never even thought of it. And all of a sudden, I'm bringing clients all the time, and I get a commission. And so what I did was, there was a bunch of condos in one building, and I started selling them. And I'd make commission on the sale, and then I renovated them with the money from the buyer. So I would say to the buyer, if you renovate this to a certain standard, which costs about $15,000, which isn't a lot of money for a lot of Americans, I'll rent it out for you. I've been doing this, and now the hotel's growing. It's called Las Torres Gemelas Private Suites, ltgps.com, if you want to check it out. And my condo company is acacondos.com. I started with 0 money down. I never put a penny of my own money into it. And now I have a real estate company and a hotel. And you can do that almost anywhere in Mexico. You can do that almost anywhere in Latin America. And these are the kinds of ideas, the kinds of things that you can do. Of course, it's not easy. Nothing ever is easy in business. It took a few years to really get to be making good money. These are the kinds of things you can be doing out there.
Yeah, man, that's crazy. The Cambodia thing is stuck in my head, that you could open up a bar for so little. I mean, and what you did in Mexico is pretty impressive too. But I guess my girlfriend and I, you know, if we had a couple of months, we're pretty sure that the apartment we live in now is the last apartment we want to rent. If we want to buy something, but then we're like, we don't want to buy something here. We don't want to buy something in this country, you know, and just have it be taken away or watch the value drain out of it. But we just don't have the knowledge on necessarily where to go. But we could put together like $10,000-$15,000 in a matter of months and maybe take off for Cambodia and open up a bar.
Oh, that's $10,000 or $15,000 in a place like Cambodia, or if you want to stay on this side of the world a bit more, Nicaragua. It's really growing, very cheap. I really like it there. It's incredibly nice, beautiful. There's so many places where $10,000 or $15,000 is a large amount of capital that you can definitely start up a business that will do quite well.
And where do you think people would go for the most information or the most knowledge? I mean, are you doing, with the stuff you're doing with Dollar Vigilante, the articles you're writing, are you writing those kind of things for people who don't have a lot of resources on what they can do?
Yeah, I do for everyone, all the way from broke to incredibly rich. We've got some billionaires who are subscribers, and I have ideas for them. We have a lot of very broke young people who just have no capital at the moment, and so these are some of the ideas that I'm giving them. I really want to help a lot of people out because I really see a lot of the people who've grown up in the West, they're feeling very depressed. They really see no future for themselves, and there really is no future for them in the U.S. for sure. It's going to get nothing but worse from here. All the opportunities, most of them are gone. There is still opportunities, but you need a fair amount of capital to even try to do those things. And then after all the regulations and taxes, it's really hard to get into almost any business in the U.S. anymore. So I'm really saying to people, just like the people for the last 100 years, all went to the U.S. because it was the, you know, home of the free and land of opportunity. It used to be. It's not anymore. And now much of the rest of the world is more like that. You look at the Soviet Union, Russia. You look at China, you look at what Edward Snowden did recently with the NSA. Right. He actually defected to China to get away from political oppression in the U.S. This is, the whole world has flipped in the last 40 years. So you really have to get outside of the headspace of how things used to be and realize that everything's changing. And you see, we run tddpassports.com. We have hundreds of clients who want out of the U.S. So everyone's fleeing the U.S. now, and rightly so. If you're smart, you should look to get out. We also write another newsletter, just so you know, called TDV Homegrown, and that's for people who want to stay in the U.S. They don't want to leave or they can't leave, and we give them tips every month and ideas on how to survive, how to make money still, even though it's very hard nowadays to do so, and that only costs $40 a year. So we're trying to really help as many people as possible, try to wake up as many people as possible, show them that how the world's changing, and I've been out here doing it for 10 years, so that's I've got quite a perspective on how to survive and how to prosper outside of the U.S. or even inside the U.S., and we have writers who are in the U.S. who have lots of ideas all the time on how you can still survive, how you can still make money in the U.S., and how you can stay safe, because it's going to become very dangerous in the next few years in the U.S.
Yeah, that's such a funny thing you say that, because it's hard to get past this mental block, or I guess this programming, that a place like Cambodia or Acapulco is super dangerous, when really the danger is probably going to be knocking on your door in a few years wearing a police vest.
Yeah, totally. But I compare the U.S. today, I call it the USSA, I compare it to the Soviet Union during its collapse. The biggest difference between the Soviet Union during its final years and the U.S. is that in the Soviet Union, everyone knew that everything they were seeing was wrong and was propaganda. There used to be two propaganda sources in the USSR. One was called Izvestia, and one was called Pravda. And one meant the truth, and the other meant the news. And there used to be a saying in the Soviet Union that there's no news in the truth, and there's no truth in the news. The biggest difference with the U.S. today is people have been so propagandized and brainwashed for all their lives that they actually still believe it's the land of the free, home of the brave. You know, in Boston, where millions of people hide in their houses when there's a little boy with a pressure cooker from his kitchen running around, supposedly a land of the brave, home of the free, with 8 times the average prison population. 90% of people in prison camps in the U.S. are there for victimless crimes, which means it's not a crime. So people don't see it. They've been really amazingly brainwashed, but they are slowly waking up. And it really is. I look at the USSA today just like the USSR in the 80s. And the only difference is that a lot of American subjects, or slaves as I call them, really haven't woken up yet to realize they actually are living in an empire that is going to collapse.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. I mean, let's talk about the people who aren't ready to move. You said you do some things for them. Let's talk about how they would get ahead economically. I've heard Bitcoin is pretty popular, but everybody says, you know, buy gold. But gold is is over $1,000 an ounce. Like, it's going to take me a couple months to get to an ounce of gold. You know, I feel like there's not much room for growth there for someone who doesn't have a lot of capital to put into something. But I know you're involved in some Bitcoin projects, right?
I was. I'm a huge fan of Bitcoin. Before I talk about Bitcoin, just to talk briefly on gold.
Sure.
Gold is more of a way to conserve your wealth. It's more for safety. So I wouldn't look at it as a way to make a lot of money, although it will go up for sure. Gold will go up. It'll probably hit $1 trillion an ounce in 5 or 10 years. But at that point, a Big Mac will cost $1 billion. But it's a way to conserve or to save your wealth. If you don't have any wealth, that's probably not the way to make a lot of money. Bitcoin's very interesting. It's very speculative. The reason I like it so much is it's a free market money. It's created by the private enterprise. It's not controlled by central banks. It can't be controlled by central banks. It can't be controlled by government. People used to ask me, actually, a few years ago, they would say, well, you're saying the U.S. dollar is going to collapse and all fiat currencies are going to collapse. Well, what will happen? What will people use for money after that? And I used to say, well, probably gold and silver and some sort of derivative, some sort of digital gold and digital silver. And I always used to say, and I'm sure the free market, private enterprise will come up with solutions, as they always do. And so Bitcoin has really vindicated me on that, because that's a private free market money that's really catching on. Now, whether you want to invest in it, I don't know what it's trading at today, but as a way to make a lot of money, that's speculative for sure. But you could. If Bitcoin catches on, it'll definitely go much higher, a lot higher. But you know, it's under attack big time by the U.S. government and the central banks right now. In the U.S. and Europe, they're really attacking, especially U.S. They can't bring Bitcoin down, but they can make it very hard for people to use. But people all over the world have begun to use it, especially in places where they have capital controls, like outward capital controls, like real solid capital controls, like Argentina or Iran. People have started to use it there. And the more that people use it, the value will definitely go up. So that's definitely something to look at. What I would do is look into a Bitcoin-related business. There's so many. Get into Bitcoin, start using it. Once you start using it, you'll start to realize there's so many businesses that need to be created. There needs to be Bitcoin insurance companies. There need to be Bitcoin dispute resolution companies. There needs thousands of Bitcoin payment companies. I've thought of many of them. I actually got involved in something called Bitcoin ATM for a period of time, but the U.S. government really shut it down. They called, if you're going to have a Bitcoin ATM where you can put money in for Bitcoins or take money out of your Bitcoin account, they say in the U.S., you're actually under 4 or 5 different regulatory agencies, of course. That's just how they keep the small guys out of business. It's called fascism. And the banks and the central banks don't want people to get involved in this. And to start up a Bitcoin ATM, I was told by a team of lawyers that it would cost a minimum of $25 million just to get an insurance bond as a money transmitter in the U.S. However, you could start up a Bitcoin business in another country and get it going. There's so many opportunities. I would definitely, if you haven't looked into Bitcoin, look into it, because this could turn out to be a future money that is used, and there's going to be massive billion-dollar potential opportunities if this catches on. And it's going to be very interesting. And if I am an entrepreneur, but I'm so busy doing my other businesses that I don't have time to focus. If I did, I'd be starting up Bitcoin-related businesses all the time. And I wrote about this in our newsletter recently, and I don't like to give out all of our secrets or all of the things that our subscribers pay for, but I'll give you one idea. Poker sites, online poker was made illegal by the U.S. government a few years ago, which is unbelievable that they did that. But of course, they had Harry Reid in Nevada under the thumb of the casinos, who said, use your guns to make sure that no one can have online poker, because it's hurting our business and we want to get into that business, but we're too slow. So give us a year or two to get it set up and shut everyone down. So for the last few years, Americans couldn't play online poker, and it's a very popular thing to do. It's a very popular hobby or sport. I used to play it all the time.
I love
poker. Yeah. Start up a Bitcoin poker site and make it so it's impossible to shut down. Put it in ways offshore. put it, make it over torrents. So these are all things that a lot of techie people would understand, but Bitcoin poker site, and then any American could play using Bitcoin. So these are, there's tons of opportunities out there right now, especially thanks to the internet. And so both through the internet and through looking at other countries where there's so much more opportunity, there's a lot of money that people could be making. But the more you stay in the US and work your day job and just get your check, and then the government takes a bunch of money off the check, and then you have to pay your all kinds of other sales taxes and taxes on cigarettes and alcohol and all those sort of things, you basically have no way to get ahead that way. And so, yeah, look at these other options for sure.
Man, you know, we did do a show on Bitcoin, but I was still kind of left feeling like I didn't have a clear path on how exactly to get involved with it. What are some of the trusted exchanges, or how would you advise someone to start making a safer, less risky investment in Bitcoins?
Well, I don't call it an investment. I call it a speculation.
Fair.
Because, yeah, although I did get into Bitcoin, I wrote about it at first in our newsletter and on our blog in 2011. At that time, it was trading at $6. It since went to $250. It's now around $100. It could go to $1,000 or it could go to zero. But I think it's more like it goes to $1,000 or $10,000. But it's not going to be easy. Definitely look into it. The very first thing to do is just to open a Bitcoin account through, there's so many different places. I use something called blockchain.net to get a wallet. Start to trade in it. Offer, if you have a little business, offer your products in it. Start to use it, and as you use it, you'll start to see so many opportunities in that world. This is a completely new monetary system being created by the free market. And if you get in now, and not necessarily as an investment, not just investing in Bitcoin, although that has a lot of potential to make a lot of money, but start a little business. Create, there's I think of one probably every week that I can't believe no one's thought of yet. But you can't really think of these things until you get involved in it, because even I couldn't think of them. But once you start using it, you go, oh, this needs this, or this needs some sort of payment processor, because some people are complaining, you know, of this problem. And, you know, you just find a problem and fix it, and you can potentially make a lot of money.
Yeah, man, it sounds so easy. You make it seem like the simplest thing ever. But, you know, let's talk a little bit about your forecast for the Western economy. Obviously, it's gloomy. But, you know, what kind of time frame do you think we're working with? I mean, what do you think people are going to see in the next 5 to 10 years who do decide to stay in America?
it's, you know, if you would have asked me that 5 years ago, I would have said, I'm not sure, it could turn out okay. But everything that's going on right now with everything the U.S. government's doing with, you know, buying hollow point bullets, buying tanks, setting up FEMA camps, it's not looking good at all. And the economy cannot do well, because the U.S. government has so much debt now, it's actually taking most of the capital out of the economy and basically destroying it and putting it into things like wars, which are just bombs that are constantly going off all over the world thanks to the terrorist acts of the U.S. government and Barack Obama. It's not going to be good. However, I will say this. There's going to be pockets of opportunity during the collapse. I would stay out of major cities for sure. Once it starts to collapse, however, and once the U.S. government and the military and the Homeland Insecurity and the police start to lose control, there's going to be massive opportunities in the U.S. However, you have to get through that transition. It's very much like what happened in the Soviet Union. If you were there near the end, it got really messy. Was fairly chaotic for a period of time. And then a lot of people just started just taking over stuff. They actually used violence, which I don't like at all. They'd come in with guns and say, oh, this is my copper mine now. But there is going to be, and a lot of those people are billionaires now. There's more billionaires in Moscow now than any other city on earth. And it's because of that. And that hopefully it doesn't become that bad. Hopefully, you have to remember too, that the Soviet people had been raised for generations on communism, which is very violent. And they don't understand that actual free markets and a trade is a good thing, and actually is way more lucrative than just stealing and using violence against people. So that was their main reaction. But a lot of Americans still have a faint idea that free markets and freedom are a really good thing. And you could see, and a lot of people are very entrepreneurial. There's still so many people in the U.S. are way more entrepreneurial than most other places on Earth. And that's why there's opportunities in other places if you're entrepreneurial-minded. But what we could see is a collapse happen, and millions of entrepreneurs just pop in and fill any need people have. A lot of people say, oh, well, we have no food because the transportation system stopped. And some people have already thought of this. They'll have farms. They'll start selling them food, maybe not for dollars, but in exchange for silver coins or whatever, for matches. Who knows? It might get to some sort of barter system, or Bitcoin, hopefully, is where it would be at that point. And that's why I'm trying to get as many people on Bitcoin as possible to make this transition as smooth as possible. But yeah, there could be a lot of opportunities, but it's also going to be very crazy in the transition.
Yeah, you know, I talk about the collapse once in a while on this show, and you know, I've said, you know, if someone comes up to me after the collapse with a bar of gold, I'm gonna be like, get that out of here, I can't do anything with that, give me a sandwich, you know. And sometimes I think a barter system rising out of the ashes is gonna be like really what people need to get by day to day. Gold really isn't gonna do it.
Well, there's many ways to look at it. I definitely, if you have assets, that's one great way to continue to hold your assets. For example, if you just held it, let's say you have $100,000. If you just have that in a bank account somewhere in U.S. dollars, that's going to be gone in the next few years. It'll just be taken, just like in Cyprus. They're already putting the plans into place to do it. So if you have that, put it into gold. So at least you can save your wealth. But there's going to be so many opportunities. Back in Weimar Republic in Germany in the 1920s, they went through a hyperinflation where the currency collapsed. And there's, you know, wives' tales or maybe urban myths, or maybe it's true, that you could go around and buy like hotels, like nice hotels for one or two gold coins. This is totally possible because as people start to lose their ability to transact, they become very desperate. And during a collapse, you have a hotel. Obviously, there's not going to be any guests because no one has any money.
Right.
So you could, if you have some assets, you could walk up at that point and say, hey, I'll give you a gold coin worth today about $1,300 for your hotel, and you might get it. These are the kind of opportunities that happen during these massive collapses. It's really sad because a lot of people are going to get hurt, especially in the U.S. This is going to be one of the worst collapses ever, in my opinion. I think this is going to be the biggest event in human history when the U.S. dollar collapses. However, there's going to be tons of opportunities. Millionaires and billionaires in real money, not dollars, are going to be created during and after this collapse, but you have to stay on top of it, and you have to be aware of what's going on, and that's a really big part of it. Most people are going to be caught totally blindsided by this. Those who are at least aware that this is going to happen will have a huge advantage.
Is there a catalyst, a specific catalyst that we should be looking for? Because I mean, I know that it's coming, but it could be a year, it could be 8 years.
I always say it's better to plan 2 years too early than 1 day too late.
That's true.
And we're getting so close now, it's not even worth trying to walk the fine line. It's like being in Germany in 1942 as a Jewish person and saying, maybe we have a couple years left. It's like, no, just leave. You know, it's not a good environment to be in at the moment. Just get out of there. Really, it's too close. What's going to be the catalyst? No one knows. These collapses happen always very. You look at the 2007 collapse, 2008. That sort of came out of the blue. But of course, I was predicting it. The economy and the financial system is so massive. The economy in particular, that you can't look at all the variables. It's impossible. There's billions of actors in the economy. You never know where it's going to happen. You look at the thing that happened in the Middle East a few years ago, the Arab Spring, that all started because of a Tunisian guy in a market who was selling some sort of fruit or something. And the government was constantly taking away almost all his profits. So he really couldn't live. And he got to the point where he said, that's it, I can't take this anymore. And he lit himself on fire. That started revolutions all across the Middle East. So you never know where these things are going to happen. No one could have predicted it would be a Tunisian market guy, a little fruit seller in a market who would start all that. But I really think if you look at the economics, if you're really up to date on what's going on, if you pay attention, this system's very close now. You look at what's happening in Japan. I think Japan's going to probably be the first of the Western-style countries that have a central bank and have done Keynesian central planning and have a democracy, all the things very similar to the U.S. They have so much debt and their economy is just dying for a number of reasons right now, that the central bank has said they're going to double the yen money supply in the next 2 years, which is completely insane. That's basically saying they're going to devalue the value of the yen by 50% in 2 years, and they think that's a good thing. They have so much debt. Their population is aging. I think that's going to come to a head very quickly. That, of course, will send off a lot of shockwaves. You look at what's going on in Europe, it's a massive mess. You know, France now has 100% top tax rate. They've gone full commie. And these governments are running, you know, socialism always runs its course, and all these governments are various levels of socialist, including the U.S., and they're all running out of other people's money now. And it's going to be a huge, giant mess. You don't know where it's going to start, but it's definitely going to happen. And it's better to prepare now. We really could be talking a year from now, and it could be complete chaos in the U.S., complete riots everywhere, just unbelievable chaos, collapse. The economy could go to zero almost overnight. Could become a complete 100% police state like Boston did a few weeks ago. This could all happen very quickly. So, and you can tell by the actions of the government that they're preparing very quickly for it. So they seem to know that something's going to break fairly soon. And so to think, oh, I'll just see what happens over the next few years, I think that's really being dangerous. It's really being risky. You live in San Diego, is that correct?
Correct.
So you're pretty good. You could actually hop in a kayak and go to Tijuana if you had to.
We have a kayak.
Yeah, good idea. When I was stuck in New York during that Boston thing, I was starting to wonder how I was going to get out. And I had to go to, I had plans to go to San Diego a few days later, and I kept thinking, oh, I wish I was in San Diego right now. At least I could swim to Mexico, you know, just get out somehow. But many people live in places like New York or Chicago, and, you know, it's going to be very hard to get out if things get really crazy. So these are the kinds of things we have to think about. This is going to happen. There's absolutely no doubt it's going to happen. There's no way. I've done all the numbers now for years. I've published them all in my newsletter, on my blog. I speak at conferences. I've never had anyone show me any way that this won't happen.
Man, let's close this out on something a little more positive, on a little more on the solution side. I mean, I know you got a lot of them, and those are fascinating to me, the ones you've brought up, but something anyone can do. You know, let's say an American's got, they're just going to take their next paycheck and they're going to take off. They're going to get that check for whatever it is, $1,000, $2,000, and they're like, I'm done here. I'm going to have to go somewhere. You know, with so little, where would you advise people set up shop?
Yeah, it's really hard on $1,000 or $2,000. However, I would say this.
What do you
think
the minimum is someone needs? $5,000?
It really depends on what you're willing to put up with. If you're willing to live in hostels and willing to take buses, $5,000 or $10,000 is probably doable. Just take a bus down to Mexico or to Nicaragua or wherever. But one thing to keep in mind is that the people who came to Ellis Island about 100 years ago in New York, the average person showed up with no shoes. The total amount of money they had in their pocket in today's dollars was $90. That was the average. And so those people really took a lot of risk. They didn't even know where they were really going. There was no internet. They'd just been told there's this place that has some opportunity and some freedom, and the government isn't incredibly oppressive like where they live. And they just said, let's do it. Let's get on a boat and just go. So those people back then had a lot more balls, a lot more
right.
Cojones. It seems like nowadays people are very scared. Oh, what's my? Who will make sure that I'm safe? It's a little sad in a way, but we have so many things today. You know, we have the internet. So let's say you have $5,000 and you go to Mexico and it doesn't work out and now you're out of money. Well, go to an internet cafe, be really nice to them, say, I have no money. Can I just get on, send an email to one of my friends or family and just ask them to buy me a bus ticket back home and then I'll work it out from back there. You know, like these, we have so many, easier ways to do these things, so much more opportunity and ease of doing these things. You know, back when people went to Ellis Island, they're taking a boat for weeks or sometimes months, and then they'd get to the U.S., and then it'd take them years to travel across the U.S. to California, if that's where they wanted to go, to the gold rush or wherever they want to go. People are thinking way too safe, and I think they've been coddled into this thing that there is safety, and actually there's not going to be any government safety in the next few years, and it's going to be very dangerous, in my opinion, in the U.S. And so I would be more open to taking a few risks now than later, because it's going to be a lot easier now than once they really start shutting down the borders and really start to implement the police state.
Yeah, I agree. And it's tough to know exactly how much is enough, but I do think that a lot of times it's fear rather than finances. You know, the economic situation that you're in might be a good excuse to stay stagnant.
You know,
it's a good, convenient excuse to not do anything. But even with little resources, I guess there are options like Cambodia.
We've started up something called TDV Groups, and you can get access to it through our Dollar Vigilante basic newsletter, which costs about $150 a year. You can pay it quarterly, so like $30 or something like that a quarter. With that, we actually have people all around the world who are very like-minded, like myself, and who have expatriated from the West, and they now live. We have people in Lagos, Nigeria. We have people in Cambodia. We have 30 different countries right now, and people actually will join these groups, and you can do it through various different ways through our system, and you can just ask them questions and say, hey, what's going on in Argentina right now? We had one of our subscribers, he just got on a group about Argentina. A guy in Argentina actually was from France originally. He had a hotel there, and he said, you know, I'm looking for someone to manage my hotel who can speak decent English, because we have a fair amount of English people. So he got a job down there very quickly. This has happened dozens of times now. So you can just join dollarvigilante.com, the basic newsletter is the cheapest one, and you can get access to these groups. And almost everyone that I know of is looking for decent people in these countries, because they have a very hard time finding English-speaking people who understand how to do business. This is what I was explaining before. In a lot of these countries, even Mexico not so much, but Nicaragua, Argentina, they don't really know how to do business. And so many of the expats who have gone there, they're looking for help, particularly younger people who are willing to work for quite cheap to start with, and then work their way up as they grow with the business. There's tons of opportunities. You just have to get out there and start doing them.
Amen, man. I mean, are there any services online that specifically help people with the logistics of finding those international opportunities? Is that what the newsletters you put out do?
Yeah, that's all included in our newsletter. We're constantly putting out ideas. We connect you with people around the world who've expatriated, started their own businesses. They're very open. It's incredibly open. They're very happy to hear from a young guy in the U.S. who knows what's going on in the U.S., who wants to get out, and very often they can find them opportunities, or at least give them some idea of how they could go to a place anywhere, any country on earth, really, and survive and prosper. And yeah, we do all those kinds of things.
Wow. Well, man, I really appreciate your time. That about does it for us, Jeff. I mean, I hope a lot of listeners are pirating Rosetta Stone as we speak. Hopefully after the crash course in Spanish, we can get the hell out of Dodge before it's too late, you know? I mean, appreciate your time, all the info you've shared with the people. I mean, is there anything else you want to share with them, any other advice, or maybe tell them about your website a little more or anything?
Sure. One great thing you just brought up, so a lot of people are wondering, what can I be doing now, even if I'm not going to do something over the next few months? Yeah, start learning another language. That's a huge thing. Spanish is a definite number one, in my opinion, because there's so many countries in the Latin American world and so many opportunities and so many good ones, including Chile. So yeah, definitely start learning a language, start improving yourself, start learning skills, whatever it is. Start to learn how to become a mechanic or something that you can do almost anywhere you go and at least survive and until you can get your feet on the ground. So just go to dollarvigilante.com. We have a free blog there. Sign up for the basic newsletter if you want access to the groups and all these business ideas we have and expatriation ideas. And if you want to get out, you have a little bit of money or your family has money, go to galtskulchchile.com. We're building an expat community in Chile. We're going to need a lot of people down there to help us once it gets off the ground. So there's going to be tons of opportunity, and those are some of the ways that you can find out about those opportunities.
Amen, man. You know, if you need any good marijuana farmers in Chile, I mean, I've got a bit of a green thumb, you know, no pun intended. But yeah, man, that's awesome. I really appreciate it. I hope people feel like a little bit of relief, like there are some options out there if you internationalize yourself rather than stay in a single country that's kind of looks like a sinking ship right now.
Yeah, definitely. There's lots of opportunity. I think Americans are some of the last people to see it right now. You look at Chinese people, they everywhere you go, you can be in the backwoods of Brazil and there'll be a little Chinese restaurant. And the guy doesn't even speak Portuguese. They're very entrepreneurial. They get out there and do it. Americans seem to be some of the least open to that because they've been told by the government that the world's scary for so long that it really stops them. And that's the plan of the government and the media is to keep you there.
True that. All right, Jeff. Well, I appreciate it again. Thank you. And hopefully we can talk again in the future. Good luck.
Yeah, my pleasure. It's been fun. Thanks, Greg.
All right, man. Have a good one.
Peace.
There you have it, boys and girls. Another THC Bites the Dust. Please pass the info along. Review the show on iTunes. Add me to your favorites. All the good stuff. Facebook, Twitter, yada, yada, yada. If this chat didn't have an effect on you, then check out my conspiracy-themed t-shirts at conspiratees.net. I try to put out cool designs on really good quality shirts. No flea market shit. Nice stuff. It helps me pay the bills, keep the show going smoothly, all that stuff. If this chat did have an effect on you, save the $20 for the first bottle of Jack, and I'll see your ass in Cambodia. Thanks for listening. Peace. I want to break free. Living without you by my side.